Yes, that was actually Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons there paying tribute to a veteran radio broadcaster. His name is Joey Reynolds. He was one of the main DJs who gave them their start on radio. Also, Joey Reynolds has done radio in Buffalo, New York for many years. He's even called one of the very first shock jocks. So we'll see if he shocks us this morning. Or he was on WOR radio in New York for a decade and a half doing the overnights, including something very close to my heart called the Jewish Hour. And I may not have mentioned that I happen to be Jewish. My name is Rabbi Saul Solomon. I am the spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I'm here with, boy, that phone is making a lot of noise. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the neighborhood the one, the only, the legendary Joey Reynolds. Shalom, Joey.
Shalom. How are you, Rabbi?
Oh, thank God.
I wanted a religious experience today.
This is going. I plan to give you one. Are you ready for
I want a God shot from you. Can I have a God shot?
A God shot? What the hell is that?
Hell, you don't use that word. You're on a college radio station.
Oh, please. I use hell, damn, and tuchus. This is what I do. Anywho, where are you? You're calling, obviously, from a cell phone in a car somewhere in the Bronx. What the hell are you doing this Saturday morning?
I was having my oil changed. I went to my urologist.
You know,
when you want a car, you go to the Bronx. I mean, you know, we live in New York City, which is not known for its automobiles, as you know, not Manhattan.
Very
so
true.
You have to be in the suburbs, and when you go to the Bronx, you either get a car from a guy who gives you one that doesn't belong to him, or you have your work done, like I just did.
Now, let me ask: Are you in the Bronx, Little Italy, because you have that Italian background? Is that where you are, near Fordham?
Today I'm on Mulberry Street in Little Italy. It's the lighting of the tree, and, you know, that's a Christmas Christian thing.
I'm sorry. I have allergic reaction to that.
I don't know what a tree has to do with Jesus. He wasn't born in a forest. But, you know, we have a tradition, and Tony Danza and I are going to light the tree tonight at 6 o'clock.
Oh, I did not. Joey Reynolds and Tony Danza are doing the tree light. And by the way, the trees do have something to do with Christmas because Jesus was nailed to one. I mean, it was lumber at that point, but still.
Oh, boy.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
Was not the Jews that killed Jesus. It was the Romans. Let's get this straight now.
But I've been saying that in my one-man show for the past year. It was the Romans who did it, absolutely, of course. I think the Armenians had a hand in it, too, but mostly the Romans. Anywho.
That's where my father was born in Rome. So I take the fall. You know, it's in the family tree.
See, we'll blame it on you. That's it.
That's
we'll,
right.
The family right. Christmas tree.
I was a direct descendant of Pontius Pilate.
Now, you're obviously, people who listened to you for the past few years on WOR radio in New York may not realize that you kind of got your start, and this is before Imus, before Howard Stern, you were sort of a envelope-pushing shock jock. Why don't you tell us how you got your start doing that kind of radio?
Yeah, well, I'll be glad to tell you. What happened was in 1963, I was already bouncing around a lot of stations, and I came to my hometown, Buffalo, where you can't really, you know, a prophet is never respected in his own hometown, as the saying goes.
Okay.
So you got to do something that's a little different. So when I came in there, I had this disdain for their non-acceptance of me in my childhood, and I took it out on everybody by talking like this on the air rather than doing what they called a format, or as I call them, pukers. You know, hey, everybody, we got five in a row. This is 1560 on the dial. You know, that kind of crap. I didn't want to do that.
Right.
So I just started to talk regular on the air, and I started to bitch about what was going on in my life and how I struggled to get back there. Nobody appreciates me in my own hometown. And I went through that whole sorus, as you call it.
Right.
And with that whole deal, it caught on. It caught on. It didn't have to, but it did. It's like anything else. You don't know. You go out there and you do the best you can. I mean, I don't think anyone ever thought of Hugh Jackman as being a song and dance man, but it caught on for him, even though he's the Wolverine, you know, in the movies. But he's got that song and dance reputation in New York.
And actually, there were outtakes from Wolverine that had song and dance numbers in it. And they just said, no, it's not working in the film. So they
cut
it. No,
that doesn't work. Only in Young Frankenstein.
He sings. Give me a head with hair. Give me a face with hair. Give me arms with hair. You know, hair beautiful. Anyway, I don't know. What was I going to say? Oh, you know, but I, too.
You want to know about Shock Shock. So I got on the air and I said whatever I thought, and I stopped the music a lot, and I started to play the same song over and over again. You probably heard my theme song with Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. That's a result of not taking payola, because I didn't want to be paid off to be owned by anybody in particular, although it was offered to me a lot because at that time it became the number one disc jockey in the country, and it was very powerful. I was on radio what Dick Clark was to on television. You know, we had power. So people would come to us to have the records to become hits. I did not take the payoffs. The way to get paid was for them to either come and do an appearance for me where I charged and made money that way. It was called a record hop. Or I had them do a theme song for me in that case with the Four Seasons. And that was their payback because I had locked myself in a room and played Sherry for 4 hours straight.
Whoa.
And the record became very legendary, and it became a hit, and everybody knows the rest of the story. So you know, that's the whole deal.
Now, when you played,
take the power and run with it.
But when you played Sherry for 4 hours, did the program director come in and fire you and kill you, or did they just say, "Oh, it's just Joey being Joey"?
No, in those days it was very shocking because the audience called the police. Oh. They were wondering what was wrong, that the same record was being played over and over again, and it was the police came, and I had the doors locked, and everybody was having a fit, you know. But, yeah, the program director couldn't get in. I didn't know. There was no cell phones, you know. Nobody called you that way. We didn't have that kind of communication like we do now.
But when you got through it, did what happened after those 4 hours? What was the result?
I got fired.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And then I got hired back the next day, but I got fired.
Oh, at the same radio station or not?
No, this is WPOP in Hartford where that happened.
Okay, there's a story.
By the time I came to Buffalo, I was already primed for being a shock jock. I already knew how to tickle everybody's imagination.
One story that I really like that you tell has to do with a pair of shoes.
That's how I got fired in Buffalo. I nailed my shoes to the door because I had a 60 share rating and I was on the television telethon. And I had made fun of the guests on the telethon, and I was having a fight with the general manager of the TV station. I had a TV show as well. And my fight with him extended to the president of the company and the embarrassment of the telethon and the Variety Club Children's Telethon, you know.
Okay.
And they fired me. So I took my shoes out of my dressing room, I nailed them to his door, and I said, "Fill these, you asshole." You know, that was the end of that. So, unfortunately, the next day, they didn't hire me back.
No.
But I went on to Cleveland and Philadelphia and Los Angeles and had a wonderful life, but that guy was a big mistake. He became the president of ABC. So, but we made up since then. Not funny, but it wasn't funny back then.
Because I have burned my share of bridges. I burned more than bridges. I burned cities when I've left jobs or things like that. So do you ever regret the fact that maybe on some level you burned bridges along your career?
Well, yours was Jewish lightning. Mine was just a scorch, you know.
Right.
I think you would drive a resentment. No, not at all. I mean, I thought I was underpaid, and I thought that they were not. Listen, you know, you got to put it in frame. These days, it would be a flea fart. It's nothing.
All right.
You know, back then it was a big deal because we had only a couple of outlets and they were very important and the community was at stake. You know, these days, you know, as Cole Porter once wrote a century ago, anything goes. you can do just about anything you want right now because you got a lame society that's upside down. But let's not discuss that one. We'll be here all night. you got a society that lives off of a negative cash flow. People make money now from what fails.
I should be a billionaire then. What are you talking about?
Well, if you have reverse mortgages, and you have repossessions, and you have lawyers to defend people who are wrong, you have towing and parking tickets and taxes, and nothing is tax deductible on the punishing side of the ledger. We're living off of money that is made from people making mistakes, not people who are making progress. It's the reverse of what this country was built on. So that's my little serious statement. How about that for something, huh?
Well, you were known for doing that also when I used to listen on WOR radio when you were doing the overnight. So it would open with a 5 or 10 minute rant about whatever was in your head, whatever was bubbling to the surface. And I have to admit, after the first 2 minutes, I couldn't follow what the hell you were talking about. But you seemed really impassioned about it. So it made pretty decent radio anyway. Was that intentional?
It's called comedy, Rabbi.
Oh, okay.
Comedy is a random sampling of everything you ever had in your crazy head that gets a laugh. Hello.
That's true. I saved those for my sermons, quite honestly, and my circumcisions.
Yeah, well, you're on a forum that's different. I mean, you're not exactly being Colbert or Jon Stewart or Bill Maher. You know, I mean, these are people who make fun, and they don't stay on one subject. Right. You know, you just go where the action is. That's why. It's called ad-libbing.
I'm being Billy Graham, actually. That's what I'm trying to be. Just slightly younger.
Well, you can't ad-lib. You can't ad-lib the Torah.
You can, actually, because if you're with people who don't read Hebrew, they don't know. I'm throwing in song lyrics.
You're interpreting it. You're not ad-libbing it. You're not rewriting it unless you do the Kabbalah. Then you have an intelligent approach to something that nobody understands.
There you go. I put on the red string. I start babbling for 5 minutes. Nobody knows.
Yeah, well, why don't you have the Course of Miracles then? You know what that is, right? Marion Williamson was a Jew who made that famous for a while.
Who was that? Who was that?
Yeah. Marion Williamson, remember her?
No, I do not.
Yeah, she was a good, this is during that time in the 70s. You probably are too young for this.
Just barely, but yes. So who is this Marion Williamson? What did she do? She made a new Kabbalah or something? What did she do?
No, the Course in Miracles was one of those writings that was discovered and then and gave us the key to life. You know, right now we have the Mayan principle. We're going to all be gone in about a week, I think, or 2 weeks, whatever that is.
Nah.
It's similar to Y2K, where everything was going to tumble. We go through this. People want to live in fear. And, you know, we enjoy fear because it gives us drama in our lives, since our lives are essentially dull. Except if you're stuck in front of a 60-inch screen watching Judge Judy every afternoon, then you really do have a good life.
Well, if you have Kegel potato chips and you're watching it, you do. If it's a big screen,
yeah,
you got your Kegel chips.
It was a lot easier when I was a drunk. I could sit there and eat Cheetos in a bathtub filled with Stroh's beer and call my dealer, you know. Those were good days in the double wide that I lived in. It was a wonderful experience.
How long were you a raving alcoholic, by the way?
Half my life and the other half is sober, so now I'm getting even. I may go back to drinking.
Oh, God forbid. Well, I have Manischewitz. I have cases of it, but normally...
That's why you don't have any Jewish drunks. Nobody can stand that much of it.
It's true. Our stomachs couldn't take it, you know.
Or the Mogan David, which would not be a bad name for a talk show host.
Yeah, Mogan David is 95% sugar, I have to tell you. There's so little out. You know how much
sugar.
How much Manischewitz you have to drink to get really, really drunk? It's like this one drop of alcohol, and it happens to be wood alcohol, so it is a little dangerous. But you know,
yeah, if you have a Mogan David high, chances are you're diabetic.
Exactly. So what made you stop drinking? By the way, what finally said, you know, half my life is over. I should probably start drinking Pepsi instead.
No, I made a choice to live because I was out of cocaine.
Okay, Bolt.
And you know, when you have a drug and alcohol system, and all of a sudden, you know, you start to die. I think you've heard this already. I mean, my drug days were with Jim Morrison and the Doors and all those guys. That's where I began my journey. And, of course, you know, Jim left us shortly thereafter. But I stayed on, and I got sober. I mean, you know, honestly, that's a true story. So I really am grateful to be sober, and I've lived a very normal life for about 30-some-odd years now. It's been terrific.
Thank
so,
God.
Yeah, I'm sober and clean, and I like it. And I'm also, I choose to live, and my feet now touch this planet. Can you imagine?
I can, with my corns and my bunions. I have so many Dr. Scholes between my toes and the floor. I've never touched the planet in years. Oh, my God, it would be painful.
I don't think my out-of-body experience is over. I don't know about yours.
Now, let me ask. This is as softball a question as we can possibly have. Are you, Joey Reynolds, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah, why is that a softball question? What's soft about it?
Well, it's kind of a nice thing rather than asking about your alcoholism or your divorce. I mean, this is like...
Oh, come on. I mean, you know, everybody has some stress in their life. What are you talking about? There's not anybody listening to this broadcast right now that doesn't have some crap going on. Not anybody. No, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. You'll see that guy on the front page of the New York Times, which I don't read. I mean, you know, everybody's got something. We all do. You know, this is a country of families and science. Get over it. When you're in trouble, you go to your family. When your family's broke, you adopt another family. You know, it's a family country. You know that. And
okay.
Science is what rules. I mean, you know, there isn't anybody in the whole world that doesn't want to have an iPhone. So we got a lot in common, but we have so much. We act like we don't. We act like we're isolated units who are just observing. You're not observing anything. We're all part of the picture in the mosaic of life. So that being the case, and as I rant a little on this,
yeah.
I hope I didn't lose you after the 2 minutes.
No, well, the question was, are you in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah, the answer is, of course I am. I was in there, as a matter of fact, the night before last, I was with B.B. King at his club in New York, which he only plays twice a year, and he was there the night I was inducted,
wow.
Or the day I was inducted. And it was 1987, and yeah, I'm in there. Of course I'm in there.
Okay, that with what you turned it into a hardball question. It was a softball question. So much for asking.
No, the answer to your question is yes. What else do you want to know?
Okay, well that's fine. Are you? I know you're divorced, and that was a big part of the change in your life for a while. Are you dating? Remarried? What's your social life these days?
Well, my social life right now is putting together a social network. That's what I'm doing, but not with girls.
Oh.
I'm not with boys either.
I was wondering, okay.
I'm putting together a network of radio, television, and internet so that we can reach more than one demographic like this right now. I mean, I hope your show is mainstream, and I hope it reaches a lot of different ages and psychographics, which is conditions. I'm working on that. I'm trying to move the ball along in our industry, which right now is essentially filled with politics.
Hmm.
And I would like to see something happen, you know, and the only way you see something happen is by making it happen. You know, when I was in Denver, where are you right now?
We're actually in Greeley, Colorado, the smell capital of America.
Well, there was a station that used to carry me on television called KCNC, which was known as KOA-TV. And I was on the air all night with the simulcast. And it was the first one, not actually in history, because Arthur Godfrey did that on CBS. But I did one in the 80s on KOA Radio and Television. And I was on all night long following David Letterman on the NBC GE station and preceding the Tom Snyder in the morning, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
So I had a good run in that neighborhood where you are. And, I had a wonderful time in Denver, incidentally. And I remember distinctly that we had a crowd difference in Boulder. Boulder was a younger crowd because of the college, you know, the university.
Sure.
And also we had a lot of people who were in the service. And they were in Aurora, in that neighborhood.
Right.
And Greeley was pretty famous for middle-income people, as I recall. And then you had the other crowd from Evergreen and even Willie Nelson, who smoked half of the forest, you know.
Well, you had your own Rocky Mountain High, too. You can't, you're not one to point fingers.
Oh, yeah, didn't I? And John Denver was, of course, at Aspen at the time, and he was still with us. So we had a very good run in that area. And I remember it was eclectic. It was a bunch of different kinds of people. Colorado had a lot of leftovers from California. You know, the hippies came.
Right.
They either went to Oregon or they came to Colorado in those days. And we had a good downtown in Denver where we actually closed off the streets and made it a mall. You know, we did a lot of things that were, in a way, progressive. The airport, which is the biggest airport in the country, I think, right now.
DIA is close, it may be.
I think we have a lot in common for what I'm trying to do right now, which is to open it up for that kind of a performance. You know, not everybody in Colorado is working. You know, there's a lot of people out of work right now.
True. You're talking to one of them. Yeah. I mean, I have the rabbi gig, but, you know, it doesn't pay well.
Well, the rabbis should never be out of work. You certainly got enough to do.
Well, I do circumcisions, but I'm only paid in tips. Thank you. Thank you, goddammit. Thank you. Okay.
Well, who's not doing that? Then it would probably be a circumvention.
Oh! Let's not have a big flap about that. But anyway... but what are literally or specifically what are you doing and where are you doing it? Is it on Sudo? Is it back on?
You go right now. You can go to Facebook/Joey Reynolds now, and you'll see my show. I just did the 50th anniversary of Ed Asner last week.
Oh,
and Ed's on there with me and the mayor and the person who was the head of the Film Commission for New York. They awarded him that. But I did an hour and a half interview with Ed, you know, which is a long time to talk to somebody, but he's angry, so it was good.
Well, what's Ed Asner angry about? He's in a hit show on Broadway. What's his problem?
Well, he's angry about the social conditions of the country. That's
what
I started to talk about earlier, social networking. And I'm trying to refine the broadcast media business so that these guys wake up a little bit to the fact that this younger generation is mobile, Wi-Fi, and doesn't really give a damn about watching a 60-inch screen except if there's football on it. You know, I mean, this is a society that's movable right now, and we're isolated in many ways, but we're also communicating differently. Now, let me tell you what I said,
Okay. Because
I know you don't follow my ball too much. That's a bad statement.
Yeah, that's certainly. If I'm doing a circumcision, I'm following them both very closely, but continue.
Thank you for setting me up.
Sure.
So anyway, my daughter in McKinleyville, California, just had a baby the other night.
Mazel tov.
And thank you. And so I went to call my sister the next day. She already heard about it on Facebook. I mean, you know, I couldn't even announce to my own sister in Buffalo the birth of my grandson because it was already on Facebook.
And it was actually the fetus in the umbilicus was holding a device.
They had the information because the young people in my family are highly communicative, and that sounds like a disease. And they have a different kind of a style. You know, I mean, they get the news out real fast. They just go right to their computer or their phone, their iPhone if they have one. And, you know, they move it ahead with a smartphone presence. And I have a different kind of a, you know, I'm a little slower. I'm in the halfway house.
Oh, really?
You know, I got one leg in the technology and then the other leg in the past. So I got it kind of like my crotch is in trouble, you know, with all this.
But there's a picture of you can find on the internet where you're holding old 45 RPM records.
Oh, my God.
So you know that picture, your little baby face with hands full of these records. And the kids, we're already in the second generation beyond RPMs and 33s and 45s. Not even the first generation anymore. There's kids, people who've already having kids.
Check this out. I was in BB King's the other day. BB was playing in his main room, and in the Lucille Lounge, which is his side room, was Spyros Soukas, who was from Athens, Greece, and he has Love Born Blues. He plays brilliantly as a young man, the way that B.B. King was playing brilliantly as a legend in the other room. So there's always going to be somebody coming up.
True.
And you know, I don't think that Ryan Seacrest is a Dick Clark, for instance, but there is somebody out there, that maybe he is, there's somebody out there to replace me momentarily. You know, there's always going to be somebody who's brilliant and wonderful and better than I was every minute. You know what I mean? I'm not saying it because of my own ego. I'm just saying it.
No, but it's the way it's the way of the world. I mean, in Hollywood, there's always going to be a sweet young thing who's going to be the next ingenue, and somebody else's 15 minutes will be up unless they've got the talent to come back and do other things, you know?
Yeah, like Justin Bieber is not he's a phenom for this generation, but my generation remembers Fabian, who also was a fake. You know, I mean, he wasn't a great talent. He was a marketing tool. And he was prettier than he was talented.
Who was this? Did you say Fabian? Did you say Fagan?
And Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is in the Kennedy clan. You know, anybody that rubs up against Kennedy becomes the governor of California or the president of the United States, you know.
Or pregnant, yes. Right.
Yeah, or else drowns. But, you know, there's people who have all of this texture that comes on by association. And we're in a country that's very clannish. I don't know. Are you allowed to play the Powerball as a rabbi? Can you gamble?
Oh, are you kidding? Without bingo, I'd have no shul. Well, bingo and some, like, prostitution, but we won't get into that. Yeah. What about Powerball, though?
Well, the other night, you know, everybody's going crazy here in New York trying to win that $500 million. I mean, I don't know what you're going to buy, a small planet. What are you going to do with all that money? You got to do something meaningful with
Half a billion dollars just barely sends two kids to college these days, if you think about it. If they want a car, you know, and if they have home heating oil, forget it. $500 million isn't enough anymore. But seriously.
So where is your, I hate to use this word, where's your practice, Rabbi?
Oh, where Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. Have been there for several years, very proud of it. We started in a gas station, quite honestly. They let us use the place, and we would do a prayer, and then if somebody came for gas or oil, we'd have to run in, pump the gas, and then come out back, do another prayer. Took us all day to finish, like, five pages in the Torah, but at least we had a place.
Wait, let me see if I got this right. A Jew with oil? I don't think so.
There is a Middle East connection, I guess. Let me ask Joey Reynolds on the phone here. Tell us, over all these years, who have been your absolute best and favorite and worst and most hated guests?
Well, that's a bad question because, you know, there's nobody that is... One night I interviewed myself. That would be my worst guest. And I just ran out, you know, and I had to talk to me. The best guest I ever had was my sister in Buffalo, who makes me, you know, she's funny. She's just naturally funny. And I have her on the air, and she doesn't hold back. So she was my favorite guest, my sister Anna. She's really hysterically funny. And it's on my tape for my 10th anniversary, and people constantly say, of all the celebrities on there, I like your sister. Because it's true. She was saying all these real things that everyday people say without Jay Leno's writers. You know, I mean, she's really funny.
Fair enough.
And real. And it's great. So that's the answer to your question. As far as my personal choices for my best friend was Les Paul. Oh. He taught me so much, and he passed away 2 years ago. He left $100 million, and I got nothing. And he said to me that he would not want to ruin my life by giving me money. He said that years ago. But I think about it now, and I'm wondering, I think he should have ruined my life.
He could have given you a signed guitar, maybe.
Great guy. He gave me a $1 million career because he taught me stand-up. And now I can do it very capably, and it's because of Les, really. I owe to him. And the other person I did not have a good time with all people, was there were a couple. Gene Hackman, when I was on NBC, came down from the Letterman show, I think it was at the time. Letterman was on NBC, and he sat there and he didn't say anything, you know, which is very disconcerting when you got a talk show. And I said, how are you? And he said, fine. I said, what are you doing? Not much. You know, he was really breaking my chops. And so for about a half hour, I got nothing out of him at all. And it was very difficult to sit there and painfully have someone give you one-word answers and not be enjoying enjoying the experience and not wanting to leave.
Do you ever take that as an award-winning star? Yeah. But isn't that a challenge of, like, you're going to find that question, you're going to find that one little anecdote or that thing that he didn't think you bothered to research and kind of, you know, use that as the spatula to pry him open? Have you ever had that experience where they're just completely dead and then you ask that one question?
I found out later that Letterman has set me up. That's what I found out.
What happened?
He briefed Gene Hackman on to just sit there and say nothing for half an hour, 20 minutes or whatever it was. It seemed like an hour. So I had nothing. My tank was empty. I had nowhere to go with this, and I wound up sounding like a jerk because I was.
And it was all a practical joke that Hackman was in on.
Yeah, and you know why? Because I had one day at Christmas time at NBC, I handed out Hiya Hiya Joey Reynolds t-shirts to everybody in Letterman's audience downstairs when they were queuing up to do his show, and they all sat in the audience with my t-shirts on, so when he came out, he was stung by my t-shirts. And so he got even with Gene Hackman. That's the story.
Well, that's actually a great story, and it fares fair. I mean, you got to hand it to him. Although, it would have been nice if Hackman came back on your show and did a real interview. That would have been a menschlich kite thing.
I don't think he ever wanted to hear my name again.
So who else? Who else was a really bad or jerky person or that you hated talking to, besides me?
No, I love talking to you. You're great. That's not true. I had a very bad experience. I did the first satellite show in the country in 1977 out of California in Dick and Bert Studios. And I had, what's her name again? Martin Landau's wife. Barbara Bain.
Barbara Bain.
I remember they had Mission Impossible, the original television show.
Yes.
Which was a series that they were both working on it together and they were married. And I had her on, and I said to her, I was being flip, you know, I was just being a jerk. I said, does Martin still have that drinking problem? And she gracefully said no and went on, and it was okay. And then she left the place, and she got in the car with the publicist, who told me later, and cussed me out because he absolutely did have a drinking problem, which I did not know. And she didn't want to discuss that, and she hated me after that. So that was my big regret, that I said something unwittingly, and I put my foot in my mouth, and I had to apologize and go through this whole thing later. So that's probably the worst thing that I ever remember happening on the air.
Honestly. I have to admit, that one was on you. You didn't know. Yeah. And I do this all the time, too. I say the wrong thing to the wrong person, and, next thing you know, he's invading Poland. So
I'm going to tell you where it happens that it's really wonderful. And this is with David Brenner. Now, David Brenner was replacing Johnny Carson a lot, as you recall, and so was Joan Rivers. And what's his name who was on? Who else was there? Was one other guy they had replacing him? I forgot. But
I don't remember. But
David Brenner was on with Howard Stern, and Howard was being the wise ass that he is, of course.
Of course.
And he said to David Brenner, he said, "Oh, do you ever?" Brenner had opened for Sinatra or something, and I guess Howard had made a comment about Frank losing it. Having Alzheimer's, not remembering anything, using the scoreboard at Shea Stadium to look at the lyrics of his songs, and not being a good singer anymore. And
that would be Howard, yes.
And so Brenner said, "Wait a minute, you're going to have a broken leg. You got to be careful." And he said, "No. Frank likes me." And he says, "Likes you? Listen to the things you're saying about him. How can he like you?" He said, "No. He says he's got Alzheimer's, but he thinks I'm funny." So David Brenner says, "You better hope he remembers that he thinks you're funny."
That's a good comeback.
I thought that was the best way to put Howard away that I ever heard. And for us guys who really say things that are inappropriate sometimes, I thought it was a great put down.
Well, Stern did, like it or not, change radio in a lot of ways. Do you have any memories of him or working with him, or any thoughts on what he did right for radio or what he may have done wrong for radio?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's entertainment. You can't, if you look at it for factual information, can. I mean, you can't look at Rush Limbaugh as being someone who gives you facts. He does, but they're buried between... it's an entertainment vehicle.
Sure, absolutely.
It's supposed to amuse you and tickle you, not supposed to give you the news, not in that forum. You know, I mean, Howard is an entertainer. That's what he is. He's a goofball for the generation, making you laugh and look at the absurdity of life. So he's very, very successful at that. I mean, how can you deny that? He's rich and famous. Come on. That's the goal in America. And, you know, we're a capitalist society, and the more money you have, the more power you have. The more power you have, the more famous you are. The more famous you are, the more you're regarded. Am I on another planet?
I think we were talking about that before, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you got the list. You know who's there and who's not there. I think, unfortunately, for the last several years, the kinder and gentler has taken a back seat. I would say that, let's use examples. Oprah did not have to leave. She was very well loved, and I thought that she left too soon. I thought Regis Philbin did not have to leave. He was very well loved.
Absolutely.
He left too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And, he didn't have to go. Johnny Carson didn't have to go when he went. I don't think I had to go, frankly. But you see, the people who run the business want, first of all, they want newer and younger, because younger people keep coming up all the time. That's probably one of the situations. The other is there's money involved, you know, and they don't want to pay the big bucks. They want nothing to do with paying big money.
Can I ask you, did you ever get involved with Sirius or XM or the satellite services? Because you seem to have gone from terrestrial radio, now doing the pseudo and the web and all that, but it seems like there's a gap there where you would have naturally tried satellite, no?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I had the first satellite show in the country. I am the first satellite disc jockey or talk show host, first host.
Okay.
And what I had to do was I did a show on Sunday nights called Satellite Live, and on Monday, Rockline. So those shows were the first ones. There wasn't any money in satellite back then, and there isn't any now. There's only money if you're paid by the public money. You know, the stockholders don't make any money. That's why they're taking it over again. And it's a business that doesn't have the muscle that over the year had. You know.
Mm.
It's the economics. Now, in my XM and Sirius experience, I worked for Buckley Broadcasting. He did not want to. We had a network. I was on all over the country. Greeley was one of the markets, matter of fact. Being on the air on radio and television and having permission to do TV from Buckley Broadcasting, which owned the network, I had no permission to do the satellite. He did not want me to do the satellite because he felt that it would be given free to people who were on a subscription basis. And they would make money, but we wouldn't get anything out of it, and people would not have to come to over the year to hear me, which is what his goal was.
All right.
So it was a purpose, you know. And now you have a situation where everybody has there's a big menu, and everybody has freedom of choice. You can go on radio, television, internet. You go on your phone. You can download it. You can store it. You can move it around. You can do internet radio, as you know. You can do over-the-air radio, AM, FM, PM. You can do the satellite.
Oh, my God. I hear voices in my toaster. I mean, honestly, it's everywhere now, yes.
Yeah, the problem is that there has been no appreciation for new development. And I think the AM radio stations, I know I'm being a little serious here. I'm professorial.
A little serious and XM.
Radio stations, yes. We've had a year of political talk. I mean, you know, for two guys looking for a job that only one could have and neither one of them needs a job. I'm talking about Obama and other guy.
I got that,
I mean, those guys didn't need anything. They already are rich and famous. They don't need anything. But you're not in a country of people who need something. You're in a country of a game that has power behind it. The politics, how much of it are you going to take? We did a whole year on this, didn't we?
We did 3.5 years on it. As soon as one election's over, they start promoting the next election. That's what the media is all about. It feeds upon itself. But that's just the thing. If you have a channel devoted to politics, that's what it's going to do. You can't not go there. So already they're saying, oh, who's going to be the Republican in 2016? Is it Rubio? Is it this? Is it Jeb? Is it what? You know, it's like, stop, don't tell me yet. Wait 3 years. Let me sleep.
Well, the amazing question. Now, you know, he did a prediction for who the president was going to be when all the dust settles. And he put that in a strong box. I think he did it this time on Jimmy Fallon's show. Last time around, he did it on my show a few years back. And he was right about Obama the first time around. He did make that prediction. Then I had one of the strong boxes, so I know he didn't tamper with it.
Well, wait a minute. We all knew Obama would win the first time. He had to be a Martian.
No, he wasn't a favorite at that time. He wasn't even running yet.
Oh.
When he made that prediction.
He wasn't even born yet. And this was the miracle. He predicted it in 1970.
Born again, unlike you.
No, certainly not born again. We have just a couple more minutes.
I guess it would be safe to say you were bored again.
Oh, bum, ba-gum, bum. I should have a cymbal crash. But let me, well, we still have Joey for a couple more minutes. I want to ask a couple quick more questions. But you started, I mean, we were talking about shock jockery and all of that and shock jock straps, whatever that is. But you morphed into like the nicer guy thing, not only because of, giving up the coke and the booze and all of that, but...
Yeah, I got sober. Sobriety makes a difference. Come on.
But also, you were, and I'm always curious about this, it's sort of like watching car crashes. You were on the air during a tragedy, which I find fascinating. And how did you handle that? You were on the air when
Well, there's a little background with Jane Dornacker that maybe you don't know. First, let me tell you something really good about this.
Okay.
Jane Dornacker was part of a group called Tubes in San Francisco. Very funny lady. And after Howard left, they wanted somebody up there who had a personality that was a comic. And Jane Dornacker fit the bill. They put her up there in the helicopter. And in May of that year, in the middle of my show, the helicopter went down. And she and the pilot survived. So for the summer, she came up and she did the traffic reports live in the studio next to me, and she was very funny to have as a guest to come in with the traffic live in the studio. And I got used to having her around there. She played the piano. She was a musical comedy expert, best of friends with Robin Williams and Whoopi Goldberg. They hung around together in San Francisco a lot. And she was in a film called The Right Stuff. You maybe saw her as a tall, unattractive nurse. She's a great lady who had a good sense of humor, and even Mayor Koch at the time came and played and sang with her. He played piano. You know, I mean, it was a lot of fun. Are you still with me?
Yes, of course.
Okay, I don't know if we had a cutout on.
No, I'm here. Oh, this is a great story. So tell.
So Jane was on with me, and by the time the fall came, they decided to put the chopper up again. And in October, she went up in the chopper with the pilot, and they did the reports. And now I'm in the middle of a bad joke, and I hear this whirring sound that I remember well from the spring of the year when she went down. And it went down again, and this time there was no communication, and my heart went to my shoe because I knew it was not good at all. And I sensed it. So it was just a connection. And when she was drowned, which she was, he lived. The pilot lived. I was devastated, but I didn't know what to do. We don't know. Nobody has a manual for this.
Right.
So I just described the event and my feelings, and that's what happened. Now, let me give you the post on the story. She left behind a 12-year-old son, was divorced. And Robin Williams and Whoopi Goldberg came and did a little tribute to her on my show. We talked about it when we could all breathe again after the funeral mass at St. Patrick's. And we all had a very nice time on the air, but it was sad about Jane, of course, obviously. Now, unbeknownst to me, and I want to reveal this to the public, I never put this in any of my writings, so I'll reveal this. Last year, we had a reunion of NBC people from the radio, and everybody showed up for the thing just about, two years ago.
Okay.
And it was said to me by somebody who was close that Robin sent Jane's daughter all the way through college. and took care of all of her expenses, which I thought, you know, very privately, he's a good guy. Now, this is a guy who did the stuff with Billy Crystal, if you recall, for
comic relief, comedy. Of course. Yes, yes.
Comic relief, yeah. And he took care of Jane all the way through, took care of Jane's daughter. And I thought that was really special. And I'd like to say that because I think there are a lot of good people in the world besides the cop who gave his shoes or socks to a homeless guy.
Right, that was amazing.
There's a lot of people who do a lot of good things every day.
But didn't that experience also, I think I just read somewhere that it also kind of changed you a little bit on the air from then on.
Sure it did. It's sure because, you know, we're goofy about everything, and then you start getting less sarcastic. You know, unless you're Imus, who really likes to continue that on. I mean, and I don't not like him. I like him a lot, but I don't think it's as funny anymore. You know, it's not funny to just make fun of everybody. I think we're more socially awake. It evolved. We changed.
Well, how did you handle 9/11 on the air?
Well, 9/11 was a whole different thing. I mean, that involved. First of all, we had a city that was where everybody knew somebody. I mean, I lost two friends in that building. And it was very personal and up front. And we were uptown at the time. We moved our studios down to Ground Zero the next year. But we were 14. We were in Times Square, you know, at the time.
Yes.
And I went on the air with, at the time, it was Dr. Joy Brown. And we stayed on the air for 2 or 3 days with taking calls from people. Because I didn't do a telephone talk show. I did a live interview type show.
Right.
But we took calls and wanted to listen to everybody's concerns. You open an office and you want to hear people express their concerns and you turn it over into a medium that's rare, medium rare, you know. But we open the phones and you start listening to people and how they lost somebody or what they feel. You know, it was a lot of heartfelt. And you forget the format and the ratings and all that crap. Who cares? At that time, it's just a matter of survival and bonding. You know, I was in the post office yesterday in New York City. I mailed something to my daughter for her new baby. And I talked to a woman across the counter who was working there. And we were talking about that. We reflected on it. She saw my name on the top of the package. And she had heard me on the air during those days. And she said, boy, we really know how to get it together in New York. She's a woman of color. And I said, yeah, you know, Get It Together was one of the songs we had back in the 60s. We do know how to behave in New York. The blackout was another one. You know, we really, nobody robbed anything during that time, if you can imagine, in New York City. We know how to get it together when we have to take care of each other. We take very good care of each other on this planet when we know we have to. We rise to the occasion. You know, I'm going to jump to something for a minute here.
Sure.
I know I'm being serious, but, you know, when we had World War II, President Roosevelt, that's really what settled the economy for the country, because we were in the toilet up until then with the Depression and people were killing themselves because there's no money and the banks were falling apart. So we really had a tough ride as a country. But when we had the war and we all had to get together and everybody had to sacrifice, how about that for a word? Then we all really made it work and the country thrived. I mean, we were all rationing foods and we were putting all of our resources into making war materials. We were ill-equipped to go to war and we made it work because of that economy shift. We, after the war, did very well. And, you know, right now, I think socially, we're unwilling to sacrifice. And nobody wants to give an inch. Nobody wants to give up anything. I think the action should be right now, frankly, not between the cooperation of the Republicans and the Democrats. That's a lot of crap. That ain't never going to happen. Because all it is one party with two names. But what really needs to happen is you need to have people sit down who own companies and talk to each other and compromise. I think Sunoco ought to compromise with BP. And Nabisco ought to talk to who was the Wonder Bread people? Hostess. You know, people need to go back and forth with each other on the economy. I mean, can you imagine that half the country's out of work almost and we charge $5 for a box of crackers and $4 for a gallon of gas? I mean, what the hell is everybody thinking?
Well,
what do you think's going to happen?
They're really good crackers.
Somewhere,
True.
And the New York Times today, as I mentioned earlier, the doctors are going to be making a lot less money. They're not going to be real happy right now. You know, you got to give in. Everybody's got to sacrifice somewhere, and the war did it for us. And World War II, I'm not suggesting we have one, but that's what did it for us. We all sacrificed, and everybody had that spirit. That's the same spirit we had during the blackout and after 9/11 in New York City.
And Hurricane Sandy.
We all got together, and that's what you got to do. So who's going to get us all together? It ain't going to be Obama. And it's not going to be the other guy who lost. He's certainly not going to do it. But Obama's not going to bring everybody together. How can he? He's a good salesman with a bad product.
That's a pretty good definition. But the problem is the other guy's like a worse product. What do you do? Who gets us?
I'm not saying that one.
Bill Gates. Maybe.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm a political atheist.
Sure,
I don't care.
Bill Gates maybe could get us all together. Steve Jobs might have, but he's dead now.
So. No, they're not going to do that. They're entrepreneurial, and what are you talking about? They don't do that. They're not running for office. They're not public servants. Where's a servant? You know, Obama's a good guy. Everybody likes him. He's a nice guy. He's a good representative. He carries himself well. He talks well. He's a nice guy to have around. But, you know, we had a president. I don't know how to change the system. I really don't. But I think we got to do it somehow.
I think we just have to bring Regis back. He would. Regis Philbin. He could do it.
Yeah, well, now we're back to comedy. It's okay.
Yes.
You were right to move it. Let's get off of politics.
And then we unfortunately, this has been wonderful, but we kind of have to wrap it up. I would love to know, though.
I get it. A Reynolds rap.
Oh! Thank you. How many times have you heard that joke in your life, I wonder? How many times? Oh, are you still there, Joey?
No, that was a rap.
Oh, no. We say a proper goodbye, a proper shalom. I don't just say go away. This courtesy, my friend.
Well, you got me off on a lot of tangents. I guess I need a show.
And I know, as being Joey Reynolds, you like to get off. But, you know, thank you. I don't know what that means.
Go to Facebook, Joey Reynolds Now, and you'll see the show that I'm doing.
Say it again. Facebook.com, Joey Reynolds Now. And do you have your own website also? Do you have a personal, Joey Reynolds?
And that'll lead you into everything. You'll be led down that path and never be able to return.
It sure sounds like it. But it's been absolutely...
And where's Dave? Has Dave gone by around?
Yeah, Dave is coming back into the building after we play some music. Dave will continue the show. He's going to be talking to Robert Harling, the guy who wrote Steel Magnolias, of all people. And he'll be doing some of the cool stuff as well.
Well, Dave, I said hello. I really like him. He's a good guy. And I really appreciate your being patient with me. And I'm asking for your blessing.
Oh, my blessing. Well, let's see. Joey to the world, all the boys and girls. Joey to the fishes in the deep blue sea, and Joey for you and me. There you go. That's my blessing for you. Joey Reynolds, thank you. God bless you. Shalom. And much luck and success with doing the social networking and getting your voice still out there after all these wonderful years, and only good times for you in the future.
Thank you. That's a wonderful blessing, and I really appreciate it. Shalom.
Shalom, Joey. Bye-bye now.